This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This Feeding Time podcast is brought to you by Plan B, your go-to joint for a quick fix of great grub and wicked coffee, a new perspective to fuss-free dining. This is Feeding Time. I'm Fei Koo. On the show today, we'll be doing a masterclass on plated desserts, specifically the pavlova and the perennially loved profiteroles, served at Fufu with salted caramel ice cream. In the studio with me today, Jack and Fu from the Fufu, how would you call yourself?
Fufu Fine Desserts.
Fine Desserts, located at Taman Tun, Dr. Ismail. Now, I guess I don't need to be a genius to assume that Fufu was named after
Fu.
Chef Fu, who is obviously the mastermind behind the gorgeousness of the plated desserts that is what you guys are specialists in. Now, let's talk a little bit about what you specialize in. Apparently, it's plated desserts, which specifically denotes a certain category of desserts, of traditional French desserts.
Mm. Now, they're mainly traditional French plated desserts. So you have the likes of crème brûlée, profiteroles, poached pear. But of course, we do have other plated desserts from other nations like pavlova, which is technically from Australia or New Zealand. They're still fighting over it.
Right.
And what else? For now, we have affogato, which is Italian. Yeah.
Well, affogato is really a coffee with some ice cream.
It's still dessert. It's still considered as a dessert.
Is that right?
Instead of a drink. Yeah. So
does an Irish coffee become an alcoholic drink or a dessert?
I think it would be more of a drink.
Okay. Yeah. So when you guys started, were you very specific that you wanted to do this stuff? I mean, you obviously, Fu, you are a graduate of Cordon Bleu, Le Cordon Bleu in Sydney.
Yeah.
So you would have been exposed to quite a lot of different techniques, because I know Sydney is quite a hotbed of desserts. But they love the desserts there. If you've ever watched MasterChef, you'll know desserts are the big thing now. Uh-huh. So plated desserts, you mentioned, so it includes things like pavlova. So pretty much any dessert, really, because most desserts come on plates. Or am I being an idiot in saying that?
Well, technically, yes. I mean, if you have a waffle, let's say, I mean, if you're talking about pancakes and all that, and they're plated nicely, I mean, technically, if they're sweet, you know, they are all considered as plated desserts. So that's why we brand ourselves as in, it's more towards traditional plated desserts. So these are the plated desserts that may have come from, you know, a long time ago, you know.
Yeah, because Europe, when I hear about the desserts that you serve, there's a very traditional ring to it.
Yes.
It's not the newfangled kind of, you know, there's not a lot of foams and mousses. You're going back to the old days where, you know, profiteroles, cocombouche, you know, maybe galettes, you know, and that kind
That's
of thing
correct.
were baked. Even probably, I would say, maybe even a crepe Suzette would you have.
Yeah, we might serve that there. Yeah, yeah.
So very traditional style desserts that have their roots in a lot of the history of specifically French cuisine.
Correct. Yeah.
So when you're planning, when we're talking about plated desserts, what is probably the top three plated dessert stars that would come to the forefront?
Okay, currently, now, as of every time, we'll have 9 desserts in the menu at one time. And we still have a lot of new desserts to actually introduce to the customers. So it is our practice now, some kind of like our policy, like every month or so, we actually take out one dessert and then introduce a new one. So we keep it always at 9 desserts at a time. As of now, our menu has gone into volume 8 already. So you're looking at about 7 desserts that has been changed. But without us actually pushing for a certain kind of desserts, there's somehow customers lean towards certain plated desserts that they're mainly the profiteroles, the strawberry tart with balsamic vinegar ice cream, and the pavlova that we call the passion pavlova with Langshong tea. So these three are actually our main top three desserts since day one, and they have been in the menu since then.
Okay, well, having just come back from Australia, let's talk about the pavlova. The pavlova, which is notoriously popular, but also very difficult to make. I mean, once your pavlova collapses, or it's too sticky, or it's too hard, it really technically doesn't fall into that whole category of being a proper pavlova anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So for you, you're looking at me like, hello, yeah, sure, everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about, when you're making a pavlova, what are the techniques that you really need to have, and what do you need to do to make sure that it doesn't go wrong, to make sure it's not too sticky or too hard or too crumbly and it doesn't collapse?
The first thing, the most important thing for the pavlova is the baking temperature for the time. Yeah, you don't overbake your pavlova, that's the main problem.
What is a good time scope for the pavlova to be in the oven?
30 minutes. Then you have to turn it down your oven, then just leave it there.
So 30 minutes at what heat?
180, 170.
Oh, 180, yeah, 170 Celsius. Yeah. Okay, and then you give it that 30 minutes and then you lower the heat so that it's got time to really slowly cook inside without burning the outside.
Yes.
We might as well start with the pavlova because, well, I spent a lot of time in Australia and it's an issue of great contention to many people, you know. Is it too soft? Is it too hard? And as you know, pavlova is easy to overdo it or underdo it. Mm. So tell us how you would make a pavlova to make sure that it turns out really, really well, Fu.
It all depends on the baking temperature. You don't overbake it.
No, that's pretty much the terms that I hear from them in the kitchen. They're like, you have overbaked it or underbaked it and all that. So I guess that's the key. You know, it's so precise. And I don't know, when it comes to the temperature and the timing, and it may even differ, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. It may even differ from oven to oven and all that. So it's really a lot of, from his experience, as well as something visual as well, because they're, you know, looking at how it has expanded and all that, you know, just to get the correct texture.
So as a good yardstick, 30 minutes on a sort of 180 degrees Celsius, and then you reduce the heat. But talk us through how you make a pavlova.
Actually, it's very basic ingredients, just egg white, sugar, and a little bit of corn flour, a little bit of vinegar. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and vanilla flavor. You have to beat it slowly.
Beat the egg whites very slowly.
The meringue.
On a lower speed, right?
Yeah.
So you don't want to have it on a high speed, otherwise you overwork it.
High speed for the first, then lower down a bit.
So you start off with a high speed to get it to have the stiff peak.
Yeah.
And once you achieve the stiff peaks, you lower the speed of the rotors, the blades.
Yeah, and let it beat for like 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, in the mixer. Sugar.
So what should it look like by then? Should it look creamy and
very shiny and smooth meringue?
What you're hoping to achieve is a shiny, smooth, fairly stiff consistency, but not so stiff that you can't shape it into the round shape of the pavlova when you're putting it on the baking tray, right?
Mm.
So the thing about the pavlova as well is it's actually very sweet because it's basically sugar and egg whites. And you want almost to have a foil for that sweetness, a more citrusy, acidic foil to go against the pavlova.
Exactly.
What fruits do you guys like to use, or what flavor pairings do you like to go with the pavlova at Fufu?
Well, here at Fufu, yes, we understand that pavlova is very sweet, and especially with the local customers, they tend to find, I don't know, I think it's the tolerance of sweetness is a bit low compared to, you know, in Australia or in Europe. And so we actually, for our pavlova, half of our sugar is actually brown sugar. That's why we find our pavlova a bit brown. Yeah, but it's just us trying to reduce the sweetness. But the amount of sugar still has to be there, right, to get the texture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, with our pavlova, we pair it with the lime cream and the passion fruit pulp. So we have all these dollops of lime cream on top, you know, and the passion fruit pulp drizzled all over it. So it's more, when you eat together, that's what we recommend to the customers. Like, every time you eat together, at least it's more of a sweet-sour kind of a balance. Yeah,
because when I make it at home, I like to counteract it with a lot more acid just to give it that slightly tart flavour, or maybe have like a kiwi fruit that is a little bit sweet, then throw in some berries or something to reduce the sweetness of it.
Yes,
and like you say, a lime zest cream also really works very well, or even like say like a kaffir limey kind of style, or calamansi.
Yeah, it can work.
Right?
Yeah. Anything that is acidic and zesty.
So really there are no rules. I mean, you just know that you're working with a platform where it's fairly sweet, so you want to introduce different flavour elements, a little bit of tartness, a little bit of acid to reduce that, and even some whipped cream with a sour note.
Correct.
Right?
Yes. We see a lot of examples. Pavlovas up there, they tend to have put a lot of berries as well. So it's really up to your imagination on what.
Yeah.
You know, what,
and I think also have to have contrasting colors, really bright colors to bring out the pop of the whiteness of the pav, right?
But I think the best visual when it comes to pavlova is how, when you cut it and serve, is that that texture that you can see, you know, the outer layer being very crispy, and you just look at the marshmallow center of it, you know, yes. that, and everything looks so fluffy.
Yes.
So I guess that just, you know, get a lot of customers go, ooh, you know, with all. Yeah.
And when you see that, it's hard to believe that sugar is such an enemy that people like to make it out to be nowadays, right?
Well, we're trying to reduce the feeling of guilt from the customer saying that it's basically just air.
Air and sugar and egg whites. Sugar. Yeah. But such a thing of beauty to look at.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, next up, we're going to be talking about some of the plated desserts that are served at Fufu and which also represent a very big part of that whole culinary tradition that we know as plated desserts. This is Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9. Awesome new food like the Malaysian corned beef rendang waffle witch and Christie's crunchy kale salad at Plan B, your new local. You'll definitely not find these anywhere else. You're listening to Feeding Time. I'm Faye Koo. With me today, Fu, the young chef from Fufu Fine Desserts, and Jack, are here to talk about what is essentially going to be a plated dessert masterclass. And we've just talked about how we make pavlovas, a very classic Australian or New mm-hmm. Zealand dessert, depending on who you're speaking to at the time. Uh-huh. But let's go to one that is inarguably French and one that has gone back, you know, centuries and from which the great croque and bouche tradition stems, profiteroles. Otherwise known as cream puffs, in many other cultures, but profiteroles for the French way. And it is something that had its day in the sun quite a while ago. I mean, it hasn't been trendy to have cream puffs or profiteroles for quite a while. There was a little movement to try and, you know, get it going again in KL, I think a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But it never quite gained the traction that macarons did, for example. You know, don't you agree?
Profiterole, I think it's very popular in the 80s. And I would say after that is the macaron that actually is very famous. And, we still get many forms of profiteroles. When it's elongated, it's eclair.
Yes, eclairs.
And if you put it up in tower, it's like what you say, the croque bouche. So I guess from a choux pastry, they have many ways of turning this pastry into, you know, different forms and different desserts. And yeah, it's really chef's marvelous doing of making into different possibilities.
So at Fufu, you serve the profiteroles with the salted caramel ice cream, which you obviously homemade as well.
Yes.
Let's talk about how to make a good profiterole and separately how to also masterclass, let's workshop how to do a good salted caramel ice cream. And let's also explore the various ways you can use those two components together and separately. So our chef, I understand, is a lot more comfortable in speaking Mandarin. So we're going to let him explain how he does it in Mandarin. And you and I will jump in and translate with our amazing translation skills, right?
Not a problem.
Okay, so fire away, chef. How do you make the profiterole? 你怎么样做?
材料就只有水, flour, butter. 只是我把那个水... 换去一般的milk 我掺一点milk 所以它会比较好吃所以然后你就煮在一起 煮两三分钟 给它firm dough 然后就可以等它凉了之后 放一边的凉了之后 就可以加蛋咯 加蛋慢慢加 均匀就好了 就可以bake了.
Okay, so what Fu is basically saying is that basic ingredients for the choux pastry will be water, butter and flour. Alright, sugar. It's just that instead of water, you actually use half of it being milk just to make it tastier, right? And so you'll be boiling it.
And
you cook the mixture.
So you basically mix the butter with the water and the milk in the saucepan, and then you keep cooking it until the butter melts, right?
Yes.
And you stir it and stir it and stir it until the mixture will come to a boil?
Become a dough, like a dough.
Yeah, because once you add the flour, once the butter starts to melt, I think what you do is you will add the flour in and you keep stirring it until, and you use a wooden spoon to mix it until it becomes a dough and it starts to separate from the pan.
Yeah.
Right?
And the note, cautionary note from Fu is that usually people would just cook it just too short of time. So he would advise that at least 2 to 3 minutes.
You need to use a visual guide. I think what Fu is saying is that we need to use a visual guide. Don't just blindly follow something and say, okay, the recipe says this amount of time, so I'm just going to follow this. Uh-huh. Everybody has a different oven. Everybody has different humidity in their house. So it may or may not, you know, cause you to need to cook longer or shorter. Mm. So when you're adding your flour to your, if it's a butter and water and milk mixture, you've got to keep using the spoon and keep working it so that it turns into a dough consistency. But I think you'll know that your dough is ready when it starts to separate and when it starts to form a nice cohesive mixture and it starts to move away from the pan. That's when you can take it off the pan and let it cool, right?
Yeah, let it cool.
Okay. Then you can, so once you cool?
Once it's cool, then you can add your eggs gradually. Yeah.
So again, this is, you need to add your egg one at a time. Don't just dump the whole lot in because it gets really runny. So add the egg and you keep working it and keep beating it to fold in the egg, right? Yes, one by one. Yeah.
So this is all the process before you can put it in a piping bag.
Yeah. But you also need to remember to preheat your oven, right?
Yes.
Otherwise, you won't be able to cook it. So preheat to what? 180, 200?
190, 200, yeah.
Okay. Mm. So once you've added the egg, your mixture is going to be a little less dry. It's going to be a little bit more moist thanks to the egg, but it still has a shape that is very, very obvious. It is not going to become loose. And when you're spooning your profiterole, is there a specific technique, you know, like, do you use it like as if you would be making, for example, to make it round? You need to use 2 teaspoons to...
No, we just use piping bag and a nozzle.
Oh, you use a piping bag, or not the hard way like I would do, which is 2 spoons, turning it around and around to create a nice round shape. Yeah. So a piping bag is the easiest way. If you want to buy a piping bag and you don't have a nozzle, you can just cut it and just, you know, work it through.
Yeah, use a plastic bag also can.
Exactly, and just cut the tip and then there you go, you've got a piping bag. Right, and once you've piped the pastry out, do you then wash it with some oil?
No, we just already pre-make the cookies dough, some kind of cookies.
Yeah, to make it crispy. The name crispy profiterole is because on the top layer they have this thin layer of crushed dough.
Cookie.
So baked together, that's how you get the whole profiterole to be crispy on the top.
So how do you make the crispy the crispy layer?
Actually, it's just the butter sugar things, butter sugar flour things. You just make it flat, then we cut it with the cookies cutter, then we just put it on top before we bake it. Yeah.
So, and that's also not yet baked, right?
No, not yet.
So you just mix the butter and sugar.
Yeah. And let it chill.
And let it chill until it sets a little bit. Yeah. And then you use a cutter to cut it.
Roll it flat and then you use a cutter, like 20 cents like that. Yeah. And then you just...
So it's like a cap on top of the cookie
and
dough.
And then you just lay it on top of all the profiteroles dough.
Yeah.
And it's the crunch from the sugar that gives you the crunch from the crispiness of the top layer, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, when you're making cream puffs, as far as I know, also it's important that the steam, you let the steam rise in the oven so that you have the hollow that is result. Mm. Because otherwise, it's just going to be a solid ball of dough. Mm. So how do you make sure that the steam gets up so that it creates the hollow inside the dough?
Yeah, your oven have to be very hot at the first. Yeah, so it can rise very quickly. If your oven is very low temperature, it cannot rise.
Okay, so make sure your oven is hot enough and keep it at that, be ruthless and keep it at that 200 degrees once you put it in and leave it in. And I think the other thing that I remember being told when I was learning how to make profiteroles is that, you think this is true, don't be tempted to keep opening the oven to check.
That's what I do.
Because that changes the temperature and it causes it to go flat again, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that true?
Yes. We don't open in the halfway of baking one. Yeah. Sure.
As much as you'd like to take a look, just don't. Keep it in there and just let it cook. After the half an hour, reduce the heat.
Yeah, reduce to 170.
To 170.
Yeah.
And then just let it cook right through. So what you have is a finished product when you finally open the oven.
Mm.
Do you then pierce the bottom to let the steam come out?
No.
You just leave it.
The piercing the bottom is to fill in the
So you don't need to do anything before then to release anything.
No.
So you just literally pierce it in with the piping nozzle and you fill in your cream.
Yeah.
But that's not what we do at Fufu. We don't have the cream inside the profiteroles.
Yeah.
We cut it in half and then we have 1 scoop of ice cream in the middle. So it looks like mini burgers.
Yeah. Little salted caramel burgers.
Yes,
so now the salted caramel ice cream is also an important component because that makes the taste so unusual.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people like to make ice cream now with that ice cream churner, but in terms of making an ice cream, what constitutes a good homemade ice cream and how do you do it?
Ice cream is a basic creme anglaise. Yeah, you have to cook your milk, sugar, egg yolk together to become a sauce first before you add in your flavor. So I cook the anglaise sauce, then I add in my salted caramel.
And coffee as
well. And I changed the recipe a bit actually. the milk, instead of the milk, I use coconut milk. So
So it's a lot richer.
Yeah, it's very rich. And
surprisingly, we have customers that actually can taste the coconut milk. Even maybe my palate is not as strong. Because the ice cream actually is salted caramel coffee ice cream. Yeah, to go with the profiteroles.
Because of the sea salt I use. I don't use the regular salt. I use sea salt, so it's more like...
The flavors are a lot more vivid.
Well, one thing I learned from Fu is that the ice creams that we make at Fufu is he uses the traditional way of cooking with the egg yolk and all that instead of stabilizers.
Yeah. Even, so on the stovetop, you use the egg yolk, you use the coconut milk.
Yes.
And what was the third ingredient?
Sugar.
Okay. So sugar, egg yolk, and coconut milk.
And cream.
And cream, and you just keep mixing it until you get a nice texture.
Yeah, nice thick vanilla sauce. Then I cook my caramel, sugar and water. Then I just mix it together.
Yeah, and you don't add the salt until much later, right? Because you don't want the salt to melt, do you?
We want the salt melt in salted caramel. Okay. In the caramel itself. Then we mix it together. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, I get it. So you melt the salt in the caramel, then you put the caramel mixture into the crème anglaise, and then you fold it all together. Yeah. And then how do you turn that from a crème anglaise sauce into an ice cream?
Yeah, we just churn it because we have our own ice cream machine. So we just churn it. We churn it overnight first, so it's very cool. So then we churn it in our ice cream machine, then kind of ice cream.
How do people make ice cream at home if they don't have a churner? There's obviously a way to make ice cream that you don't have to churn it, right?
A bit difficult for home. If for home, they will just whip up the cream first. Yeah, the whip up the cream, so we got the airy.
Aerate the cream, by whipping it first.
Yeah, it's like a mousse. Yeah, then you fold it in your anglaise. Yeah, then it will become ice cream if you
chill it. Just chill it in the freezer and becomes an ice cream.
Yeah.
That's what basically the ice cream churner is doing, right?
I mean, it's just aerating the cream so that you create that sense of ice cream, the lightness and the fluffiness of the ice cream.
Yeah, with the churner, there's a cooling process going as well.
That sounds actually very delicious. And who needs a main course before they needs to have dessert, right? Dessert is a standalone thing at your place, obviously. And apart from the pavlova and the profiteroles, what are some other desserts that you're currently featuring in your ongoing menu?
All right. I can think of let's say we're talking about the French plated desserts. We have a macaron, but it's actually macaron ice cream sandwich. So it's not the usual small, how do you call it, the 50-cent size kind of macaron. It's this one is quite big. I would say maybe about
like a cookie,
3-4. Yeah, like a cookie form. And so inside you have one disc of this ice cream. So the macaron itself is actually plain, but the flavor for the ice cream, even though it's not stated in the menu, we actually encourage our customers to actually figure it out. Should I say it on air?
Sure, why not? Tell us what it is. You'll have a lot of smarty pants appearing at their restaurant going, oh, I know that flavor. It tastes like...
Well, then we try to localize. In fact, for our few of our desserts, we try to localize the flavor as well. So for this macaron ice cream sandwich, the ice cream is actually a mixture of banana, lime and coconut.
Oh, yeah.
So you get a bit of sweetness from the banana and just that tinge of zestiness from the lime.
Tastes like and so it's like a pina colada macaron.
I don't know. So it's something very local but fruity, but I find it very refreshing for this one. And we also serve poached pear. So for the poached pear, it's we pair
with
it
red with wine sauce.
With a red wine that is spiced. Beforehand, we have a put in
Indian
spices, just to enhance the flavor. And the plating, actually, it's the pear is paired with chrysanthemum ice cream.
Oh, that's
so it's
lovely.
Something, we find it interesting in terms of the contrasting flavors, something floral against something fruity, and then something oriental against something, continental. Yeah, so for that dish, it's quite a delight among the customers as well.
And well, continuing that tradition, then can we expect to see the appearance of a Bomb Alaska sometime soon?
We did have Bomb Alaska actually.
Really?
For this newest menu, we have taken it out. For our Bomb Alaska, it's not the usual big size. Bomb Alaska is more like for two to share. And the flavor inside, much to surprise of many customers, is that the cake at the base is a gingerbread cake. The ice cream on top is lemongrass ice cream with a bit of dried cranberries, and then cover it in meringue. And when we serve it, we have the rum and light it on fire and flambé. So for this dish is particularly very flavorful because we have the burning of the alcohol, the ginger and the lemon sweetness from the lemongrass and all that. So it's a lot of things happening. But we unfortunately have to take it out. Well, it really depends on the logistics in the kitchen as well and the sellability, right?
but it didn't work so well?
Yeah. I mean, and
just stay too long in the menu already.
We are glad that we actually introduced Bom Alaska to a lot of people and they get to know what Bom Alaska is about, what's the story behind this dessert. We have many more of customers, I think I would say above 40 or 50 years old. They actually
have fond memories of Bom Alaska.
Yes. They're so glad that we serve Bom Alaska and they're glad that, I mean, we have it. But hopefully this dessert will make a comeback in the future with maybe a different flavor.
So I think suffice it to say that you guys at Fufu Fine Desserts are, you know, valiantly and gallantly bringing back traditional desserts one delicious plateful at a time. And I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
It sounds like you're off to a very auspicious start, and I'm sure people are enjoying your dessert-centric menu. And I look forward to coming and trying it soon.
Yes, please.
If new customers would like to try Fufu, they should go to Fufu, which is located at
Taman Tun is Jalan Burhanuddin Helmi. So it's the part of Taman Tun that is opposite Wan Utama. So we are at the same row as Public Bank and Standard Chartered, but we are on the first floor. So you may have to look for our signage to recognize.
And if they need to call you to make sure that you're open, what's the phone number?
Okay, our phone number will be 03-2389-3155.
And are you guys available to have your pastries and desserts available for takeaway orders?
Unfortunately, for now, we only have one dessert that can be taken away because the rest either comes to the plate or, you know, because of the ice cream that melts a bit fast in the outdoor environment. So, yeah.
Moral of the story is come, dine in, enjoy, and leave.
Enjoy the ambience and our service.
Thank you very much, Jax. Thank you, Faye. Thank you to Jack and to Chef Fu for sharing their considerable knowledge about plated desserts. If you want to find out what we're giving away this week on Feeding Time, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/BFM Feeding Time. Or follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Miss Koo, that's MISSKHOO, for more information about the show. Till next Saturday, have yourselves a delicious week. This has been Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.